Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002. Houston's community station, 90.1 FM, FM HD1, Galveston 89.5 FM, and Huntsville 91.7 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated, and it airs on dozens of radio stations in different U.S. and European cities. During this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1167, I will have several segments. We will listen to the remarks of Ambassador Majid Bamya, Deputy Permanent Observer of Palestine to the United Nations, speaking at the UN Security Council on the catastrophe in Gaza. The remarks of Dr. Feroz Sidwa, General Trauma and Critical Care Surgeon who volunteered in Gaza, delivering a testimony about Gaza at the United Nations Security Council. The remarks of Dr. Tania Haj Hassan, a pediatric intensive care doctor with medical aid for Palestinians, speaking at the European Union Parliament about Gaza, and the opening remarks of Dr. Richard Falk, former UN Special Rapporteur and Professor Emeritus of International Law at Princeton, delivered at the Gaza Tribunal held in Sarajevo. I will also air a couple of poems by Dr. Fadi Juda, Palestinian-American physician, poet, and translator, delivered at the Gaza Habibti exhibition. But before I do that, I'd like to ask for your support and contributions to KPFT, this unique commercial-free Houston's community station, because KPFT is currently in fund drive, and that is a great opportunity to upgrade your listenership to listener sponsor and become a member of the KPFT family. KPFT is mainly financed by listeners like you, and it does not rely on the corporate world to operate. So please give us a call right now at 713-526-5738. And make that tax-deductible contribution to support your community radio station. That's 713-526-5738. You can also make a pledge online at kpft.org. Join us in keeping the airwaves alive. Your support during this fund drive ensures that KPFT remains a vibrant hub of local voices and diverse perspectives, just like this program, Arab Voices, that has been on KPFT for over 22 years. Yes, we started in April 2002, coming to you weekly with over 1,000 expert guests appearing on this program from across the world. So it's crucial to continue your support to your community radio station, KPFT 90.1 FM. Every dollar you contribute goes directly towards sustaining independent journalism, empowering grassroots initiatives, and fostering a sense of belonging in our community. Together, we can make a difference through the power of community radio. 713-526-5738 is the number to call right now and support your community radio station. And again, you can do it online safely and securely at kpft.org. Arab Voices, if you're not familiar with it, is an award-winning independent radio talk show that aims at bringing the truth, facts, and realities to the wide and diverse range of listeners. It debunks many of the stereotypes, myths, and false information disseminated by certain media outlets, some politicians, and others. So if you appreciate what this station has been doing, I ask you to support it and keep Arab Voices and other programs on the air. Please make that call and make a pledge of any amount, whether it's $60 or $360. Call 713-526-5738 or make a pledge online at kpft.org. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. On May 23, 2025, Ambassador Majid Bamya, Deputy Permanent Observer of Palestine to the United Nations, spoke at a UN Security Council session on the safety of civilians, humanitarian and UN personnel, journalists, and enhancing accountability. During his remarks, Ambassador Bamya called on the international community to dare and do what is necessary to stop the genocide in the Gaza Strip, urging immediate action to protect civilians. Let's listen to his remarks.
Gaza. The name alone suffices. The images it invokes are daunting, which means everybody knows the truth. And yet Gaza still bleeds, still burns, still buries its sons and daughters when it has the luxury of doing so. Israel banned international media to prevent the images from reaching you. But Palestinian journalists and simple citizens recorded the crimes. They sometimes were killed for what they documented, and sometimes documented their very own death. They thought at first that if these images reached the world, it would not allow the genocide to continue. Now the survivors are recording, so the true tale of their massacre survives them. Protection of civilians, which civilians? Does that concern Palestinian civilians? Israel deprived all of them, every single one of them, of protection. In its book, in its cynical narrative, it promotes the idea that they are all either terrorists or human shields. In the first case, they deserve to die. In the second, Israel cannot be blamed for their death. Never mind that it uses one-ton bombs obliterating entire neighborhoods. Never mind that it's imposing a blockade over the entire civilian population. Never mind it is flattening all of Gaza. For 20 months now, daily atrocities have occurred under our watch and before our very eyes. No protection for Palestinian civilians. All protection for Israeli perpetrators. The whole world chants for Gaza, weeps for Gaza, aches for Gaza, is outraged by what is happening in Gaza. But the people in Gaza, the children of Gaza, have no use for our chants, for our tears, and for our outrage if they are not accompanied by actions that could actually stop the killing, feed the hungry, heal the wounded, save those who can still be saved. We demanded the unhindered supply of humanitarian aid to Gaza. We've been demanding it for 20 months. We've been demanding it after Israel blocked all aid for the last 2 months. But the only unhindered supply to Gaza are bombs. Everything else is lacking. Water, food, shelter, medicine, fuel, cooking gas, flour, and hope. The whole world stands with Gaza, and yet Gaza stands alone. All this solidarity from across the globe, and yet we can't help a father begging for help as his child is burning before his eyes, as he sees his skin melting and can only watch him as he shouts in pain. Flames and hunger devouring Palestinian children. And we all agree, it's shameful, it's unbearable, it's unacceptable. Leaders are using words they never used, considering decisions that are unprecedented. But much more is needed to break the siege and save the people. Much more is needed, and we are already late, very late. What are we going to say? That the whole world was opposed to mass indiscriminate killing, but it continued anyways? The whole world was opposed to wanton destruction, but stayed until all of Gaza was flattened? The whole world was outraged by the use of starvation as a method of war, and the declared blockade, but could not lift it? That it's ultimately for Israel to decide who lives and who dies? If that's our plan, God have mercy over the 2 million people in Gaza. How come all of us cannot stop the bombs decimating families and destroying communities? How come we cannot stop the sniper's bullets before they are lodged in a little girl's head? That we cannot get a painkiller to a child being amputated, bring milk in to feed a starving child, or a loaf of bread to save a life? How come we still can't? We should never believe the tale of our own powerlessness. Never believe that we are powerless. We cannot leave the fate of 2 million people saying we tried and failed, because that means they are doomed. We fought for 20 months against the dehumanization of Palestinians that made their mass killing acceptable. But we must warn now against relying on Palestinian heroism, as seeing them as heroes might mean we forget they are humans. They are bleeding, they are exhausted, they are shattered, they are victims. We failed the dead. Let us not fail the survivors. 1 million child in Gaza will need several lives to recover from what they witnessed and endured. But they can still be alive tomorrow if we act today. Once the world has recognized the genocide, it cannot continue watching it unfold. We cannot wait. We cannot resign. We cannot surrender. We must dare and do what is necessary to end the genocide and break the siege. Maybe then we can save the survivors. Save Gaza, so we may all be saved by Gaza. Save Gaza, save the children of Gaza, so we may all be saved by Gaza.
That was Ambassador Majid Bamia, Deputy Permanent Observer of Palestine to the United Nations, speaking at a UN Security Council session. At a different UN Security Council meeting held on May 28, 2025, Dr. Firoz Sidwa, a general trauma and critical care surgeon who volunteered in Gaza, delivered a testimony about Gaza and what he witnessed there. Let's listen to his testimony.
My name is Dr. Firoz Sidwa. I am an American trauma and critical care surgeon based in Stockton, California. I come before you today to speak about the Gaza Strip, where I have volunteered twice since October 7th. First at European Hospital from March 25th to April 8th of last year, and most recently at Nasser Medical Complex from March 6th to April 1st of 2025. Both are in the city of Khan Yunis. I'm not here as a policymaker or a politician. I'm a physician bearing witness to the deliberate destruction of a healthcare system, the targeting of my own colleagues, and the erasure of a people. The Constitution of the World Health Organization states that the health of all peoples is fundamental to the attainment of peace and security and is dependent on the fullest cooperation of individuals and states. I've taken this to heart, and it is the reason I volunteer in conflict zones from Haiti to Ukraine to Gaza. In Gaza, I operated in hospitals without sterility, electricity, or anesthetics. Surgeries took place on crowded and filthy floors. Children died not because their injuries were unsurvivable, but because we lacked blood, antibiotics, and the most basic supplies that are readily available in any large hospital anywhere else in the world. I did not see or treat a single combatant during my 5 weeks in Gaza. My patients were six-year-olds with shrapnels in their heart and bullets in their brains, and pregnant women whose pelvises had been obliterated and their fetuses cut in two while still in the womb. Mothers sheltering in the hospital cooked bread on hot plates in the emergency department during mass casualty events as we dealt with the rain of fire and death falling around us everywhere. Mr. President, the foundations of life in Gaza, family, health, and community, have been shattered. The medical system has not failed. It has been systematically dismantled through a sustained military campaign that has willfully violated international humanitarian law. Civilians are now dying not just from the constant airstrikes, but from acute malnutrition, sepsis, exposure, and despair. Between my two visits to Gaza, I witnessed a sharp decline in patients' health, driven not just by injury, but by worsening hunger and malnutrition that left their bodies weaker, their wounds slower to heal, and their survival far less certain. And let's not forget, this is a man-made catastrophe. It is entirely preventable. Participating in it or not, allowing it to happen, is a choice. This is a deliberate denial of conditions necessary for life: food, shelter, water, and medicine. Preventing genocide means refusing to normalize these atrocities. It means refusing to dehumanize the Palestinians, to refuse to see them as calories counted or numbers of trucks moved. We see now that this way of thinking has brought about a human dignity crisis, with an entire people on the edge of survival. On March 18th, the ceasefire was violated by Israel. That day, I witnessed the most extreme mass casualty event of my career at Nasser Medical Complex. 221 trauma patients arrived in one morning. 90 were dead on arrival. Nearly half were severely injured children. No health system on earth could cope with this, least of all one that is besieged and starved of supplies. Hospitals are meant to be sanctuaries. Healthcare workers and first responders are supposed to be protected. Children are supposed to be protected. In Gaza, these protections are simply gone. Every day, the distinction between combatant and civilian is erased. Most of my patients were preteen children, their bodies shattered by explosives and torn by flying metal. Many died. Those who lived often awoke to find their entire families gone. Last year, I published in the New York Times a survey of 65 American healthcare workers who had served in Gaza. 83% of them reported seeing children shot in the head or the chest. I personally treated 13 such cases in my 2 weeks at European Hospital. According to the War Child Alliance, nearly half of Gaza's children are suicidal. They ask, why didn't I die with my sister, my mother, my father? Not out of extremism, but out of unbearable grief. I wonder if any member of this council has ever met a five-year-old child who no longer wants to live, let alone imagined a society in which so many young children feel this way. And what astonishes me is not that some children in Gaza have lost the will to live, but that any still cling to hope. My Palestinian friends, mostly healthcare workers, no longer speak of resilience or even survival. Parents memorize their children's clothing in case they must identify their remains later. They pray for one piece of bread to give them before they sleep so that their children might die less hungry if they are killed at night. And meanwhile, my Israeli and American friends express horror at what is being done in their names. Many of us cannot understand how our governments continue to arm this senseless destruction. But you in this chamber have the power to stop it. Mr. President, I am here because I have witnessed what is happening in Gaza with my own eyes, especially to children, and I cannot pretend not to have seen it. You too cannot claim ignorance. I urge the Council, and especially my own government, to act with urgency on these enforceable measures. 1. Demand an immediate and permanent ceasefire, including a halt to all arms transfers to all parties to the conflict, alongside targeted and lawful sanctions on Israel. 2. Demand the reopening of all of Gaza's crossings and guarantee unrestricted medical evacuations, including to hospitals in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, where Palestinian patients can be treated by Palestinian doctors, with safe return to Gaza assured. 3. Guarantee sustained humanitarian access throughout Gaza, allowing all essential supplies, shelter, food, water, fuel, and medical supplies to reach all people in need. 4. Strongly and explicitly reject the weaponization and politicization of aid embodied by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, whose executive director, a veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps, publicly resigned on Sunday, citing the foundation's lack of adherence to humanitarian principles. We must affirm support for existing UN mechanisms, back UNRWA, and ensure NGOs with expertise in reaching and providing specialized care to those in need have unimpeded full access. 5. The immediate and unconditional release of all hostages. 6. The immediate and unconditional release of all healthcare workers, including Dr. Hussam Abu Sufia, now held in Israeli detention for more than 150 days. And 7. Without delay, uphold the UN Charter and act now to prevent genocide. One day, Gaza survivors may have a record of the empty promises made by the members of this council as their wounds deepened and their lives were lost. If this council remains silent and fails to act now, that record will stand as a testament to a global failure to provide urgent care and to the collapse of our collective conscience. I'm pleading with you to do what you were entrusted to do, to protect international peace and security, and to prevent irreversible harm. The steps I mentioned are the very least that is needed. I'm asking my own government's representative to hear the voices of the majority of Americans who are calling for the same. If this continues, there will be no Palestinian doctors left, no one to care for the sick and wounded. There will be no Palestinians left to rebuild the healthcare system. We are losing a generation before our eyes, condemning people to die of hunger, disease, and despair, deaths that could be easily prevented. Thank you.
That was Dr. Feroz Sidwa, a general trauma and critical care surgeon who volunteered in Gaza, speaking at a UN Security Council meeting. Dr. Tania Haj Hassan, a pediatric intensive care doctor with medical aid for Palestinians, who spent months in Gaza in 2024 and 2025, spoke at the European Union Parliament on April 28, 2025, about Gaza and what she witnessed there.
I was invited here today to speak about what I witnessed in Gaza. What is left to say? What has been shared before me by my co-panelists here and has been said over and over again for the last year and a half is already so damning and both morally and legally sufficient to merit a response. In the words of my close friend, a surgeon in Gaza, when I asked her what I can share with the world, she said, "I don't know what one can say or write, honestly. Last time I was asked this question, I felt like screaming in the face of the whole world and telling them, what are you waiting for? You've seen and heard it all." So nothing I can say today can fully encapsulate the catalog of atrocities that I witnessed last year in Gaza, that I witnessed this year in Gaza. Just in the last 10 days that I was in Gaza, this past time, so only 3 weeks ago, in addition to Israel's vicious break of the ceasefire agreement, killing or maiming 100 children every day, according to UNICEF, we had 76 dead bodies in our ER within 2 hours, or in the morgue of the hospital I was based at, early morning on March 18th. In these last 10 days of the time I was in Gaza, the Israeli military also shelled a UN team, killing and maiming members of it, bombed the ICRC offices, directly hit Nasser Hospital, where I was working with a drone strike, killing 2 patients and injuring others. They completely leveled the only specialty cancer hospital in Gaza. They killed multiple Palestinian journalists, while international journalists are still not allowed in after a year and a half of these crimes, and executed at close range 15 rescue workers, as I'm sure most of you here know, who were desperately trying to rescue the wounded in Rafah and then subsequently buried them in a mass grave, along with their ambulances and rescue vehicles. What red lines were not crossed in only those 10 days? I'm asking you, at this point, what is left to say? Each of these incidents on its own should have been enough. And if committed on another population, probably would have been enough. My question for you is, why wasn't it? Each one of the people I met in Gaza, each one of the children that I treated, has been on the receiving end of these crimes for a year and a half. Indiscriminate killing, maiming, unlawful detention and torture, forcible transfer, forced starvation, deprivation of education, deprivation of access to clean water and sanitation. What do I tell the patients I saw in Gaza who were the victims of these atrocities and European complicity in them? What do I tell Amina, a 5-year-old with severe burns, who lay in the intensive care unit bed, staring at the wall without crying in pain or asking for anything? She, like so many children we treated in Gaza, have witnessed the most horrific crimes perpetrated against them continuously for a year and a half and with full impunity. What do we tell all the children of Gaza about why we let this happen, and for some, why they even enabled it? Or 7-month-old Aline, who was born into this genocide as her family struggled to protect her, only to be bombed, subsequently trapped under the rubble meters away from her home, extracted by a family member when he heard her crying. Aline's eyelashes and hair was singed. Her skin reeked of the weapons provided and funded by Western nations as she clung on to my clothes in the ICU. Aline's mother, father, Aline's mother, father, and 5-year-old sister were all killed. She's the sole survivor of her family, orphaned at the age of 7 months. What are we going to tell Aline if she survives this? I promised myself yet again that I wouldn't cry. I'm clearly not very good at this. Or 5-year-old Mohammed, with a penetrating injury to his head, likely a gunshot, who died in the ER when there were no beds in the ICU. He had no surviving family to retrieve his body and was taken to the morgue by the medical team. Do we wash our hands of accountability because his entire family was exterminated, leaving no one to be accountable to. What do we tell 13-year-old Amir, who sustained severe neck trauma after his home was bombed and kept calling for his sister, who he didn't recognize was the girl in the bed next to him because she'd been burned beyond recognition? I tell Amir's story often because I thought about what I would do if I were in Amir's place that day in the ER before he knew that the rest of his family had died. A day later, when he learned this, he whispered to me, "I wish I died with them. Everyone I love is in heaven. I don't want to be here anymore." What do we tell Amir? What do we tell Zakaria's mother, who survived for months on cooked foraged leaves, refusing to eat her ration of bread, made with ground bird feed, so that her 4-year-old son, who was also malnourished, could eat it as Israel destroyed Gaza's agricultural land and blocked food aid at its border, starving an entire population? What do we tell Zakaria's mother? What do we tell my good friend, Mu'tasim, a young healthcare worker whose mother, sister, nephews, and nieces were all violently killed a year ago? And now, 15 months after the ICJ ruled plausible genocide, and Israel unilaterally broke the ceasefire, raining hell on Gaza starting March 18th, killed Mu'tasim's father and brother, paralyzed his only remaining sister. What do we tell him about why provisional measures meant to protect people like his family were just met with accelerated, indiscriminate killing? I asked a few of my colleagues in Gaza what they wanted me to share with the European Parliament today. These are some of their messages. We are in a killing field, not only because of the impact of bombing. We are really waiting in our spots in a killing line. This was an ICU doctor colleague of mine. An ER nurse told me, "Tell them, doctor, we don't have any path left except the path to death, the path of relief and escape from this lying, unjust world. Why is it that only the people of Gaza and Palestine are destined to resist this injustice alone and to resist the occupation that the entire world supports? Why is it that we are destined every day to lose a mother, a brother, a sister, and a friend? Why is it that I'm destined to die and even want death because I'm afraid of losing parts of my body or being disfigured by the bombing, or being lost or being left trapped under the rubble, or even having them not find my dead body? Or even worse than all of that, to lose your family or even all of your loved ones in one day and then you're left alone. You can't imagine the bitterness of that loss. I don't want my voice to be heard. I don't want to bother them with talk of Gaza and its story. I just want anyone to speak out against this injustice, but not only with words, with their own hands and actions." An anesthetist said, "Did the people really see the charred bodies of children? I just don't understand." That was his only message to you. Pharmacist colleague said, "We are people, not just numbers. We're living in unimaginable suffering that worsens every day. I recently lost faith in anyone that claims to be taking action. We need real action, not just words. There is no accountability. All the international laws they claim to champion have been violating in Gaza, and nobody does anything." What do we tell these healthcare workers? The fate of each of the hospitals where they work across Gaza Strip should have been enough. They should have been the red line. And yet all 36 of the hospitals were not enough. Do you remember the Al-Nasr Pediatric Hospital where infant bodies laid connected to the ventilators as they decomposed in the ICU after the Israeli military forced the medical staff to evacuate, telling them that the children would the patients in the ICU would be evacuated safely? I worked at Nasser Hospital and visited its remains just last month. That hospital where those babies' bodies were decomposing is flattened now by the Israeli military. Or its neighboring Rantisi Pediatric Subspecialty Hospital, where I also worked before. Rantisi Hospital cared for Gaza's sickest children. It was forcibly evacuated and used as a base for the Israeli military, where they intentionally destroyed life-saving equipment. I saw machinery with the motherboards, medical equipment with the motherboards shot at, clearly intending that these life-saving equipment are never used again. Or Al-Shifa Hospital. a hospital many of you are probably familiar with, the center of Gaza's healthcare system, that was attacked initially in November 2023 in the shadow of disinformation, causing international outcry. And yet, when attacked again in March 2024, destroying and burning it, it barely received any attention. The Israeli military destroyed all but the maternity building. All equipment and medical supplies were burned. We walked through its rubble when I was there last month, including three mass graves that were told some 170 bodies were recovered from, some unidentified. We saw mounds of charred IV lines, dialysis equipment, patient beds, and wheelchairs hanging out of blown-out walls. Everything used to heal in a hospital whose name, as Shifa, means healing, was destroyed. I could go on and on about the Indonesian hospital, about Kamal Adwan Hospital, about Al Emirati Hospital, Al Auda Hospital, Al Nasser Hospital, Al Aqsa Hospital, Al Ahli Baptist Hospital, bombed just 3 weeks ago, Al Durra Pediatric Hospital, bombed just 4 days ago after the team tried to set up in another intensive care unit there. There are no remaining pediatric intensive care units for the population in Gaza City and the north of Gaza. The organization I went to Gaza with, Medical Aid for Palestinians, helped set up a small ICU in a non-governmental hospital that didn't have an ICU before. There are 6 pediatric intensive care beds. There were no neonatal intensive care beds left for Gaza City in the north of Gaza when I was there. They set up 6 neonatal intensive care beds in that same small non-governmental hospital. So all 12 beds, PICU and NICU, have a total of 5 ventilators. 5 ventilators for over 1 million people. There are 30 ventilators sitting at the Gaza border, or in Israel, prohibited from entering Gaza. These are 30 ventilators, UNICEF ventilators, prohibited from entering Gaza. I was told just last night by one of my colleagues from UNICEF, who's currently in Gaza, that 24 newborns died in March alone because of this blockade of essential medical equipment. Unlike the first and second hospitals bombed in 2023, not even an attempted justification was required to ensure the impunity of attacks on most of Gaza's 36 hospitals. Impunity of attacks on over 140 ambulances that were destroyed in Gaza, and the over 1,400 doctors, nurses, paramedics, and other healthcare workers that have been killed in Gaza. The hundreds of healthcare workers that have been detained unlawfully and tortured in Israeli prisons. Killing healthcare workers, bombing and destroying hospitals and ambulances has become an internationally accepted and tolerated norm. What do we tell my colleagues about why we clap and bang pots applauding our healthcare workers heroically during the COVID pandemic? While we tolerate the intentional targeting and massacre of Palestinian healthcare workers who courageously continue to provide care for their patients in the midst of genocide. What will we tell future generations about what Europe was doing when we watched as 100 children were maimed or killed every single day? As we watched as their dismembered bodies were desperately streamed by courageous Palestinian journalists when international witnesses were barred. As we watched them burn alive, including the nephews and nieces of one of my colleagues and friends in Gaza. As we saw the most live-streamed genocide in modern history be met with silence, empty words, or worse, enabling. Western governments at most express deep concern without stopping to supply Israel with the technology, intelligence, and weapons to continue this war. Do we tell future generations that Western societies gave permission to exterminate the Palestinian people? I came here today with a very small and frankly naive hope that maybe something I share, we share with you, might move this parliament to action. And if not, at the very least, I came here today to share what we witnessed in this building so that no one here can say that they didn't know, only that they knew and they didn't do anything. I know that by virtue of being here today, many of you are already convinced of the need to act. It's not too late. too late for many, but it's not too late for the rest. So I urge you, I implore you, no more words. Please act.
That was Dr. Tania Haj Hassan, a pediatric intensive care doctor with Medical Aid for Palestinians, who spent months in Gaza in 2024 and 2025, speaking at the European Union Parliament. You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different U.S. and European cities. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Shortly, I will air the opening remarks of Dr. Richard Falk, former UN Special Rapporteur and Professor Emeritus of International Law at Princeton, delivered at the Gaza Tribunal held in Sarajevo. But I'd like to remind you that KPFT, Houston's community station, is currently in fund drive, and because KPFT relies on your support to operate, I am asking you to please call us right now and make a tax-deductible contribution. During this membership drive, please make a gift in support of the wide variety of shows that matters more than ever on KPFT. Please give online at kpft.org or call 713-526-5738. Members are the single most important source of funding for KPFT 90.1 FM. Why don't you call right now to make your membership investment and become a part of that important source? 713-526-5738, or you can give online at kpft.org. And if you make your membership a sustaining one, you'll be supporting the station for years to come. 713-526-5738 or kpft.org. This program, Arab Voices, has been on KPFT for over 22 years, coming to you every week, covering various topics with over 1,000 expert guests appearing on this program from around the globe. I interview guests on the show, and I also attend events and lectures, record them, and air them. Several radio stations syndicate Arab Voices in different cities in the U.S. and even a couple of cities in Europe. So if you appreciate what this station has been doing, we ask you to support it and keep Arab Voices and other programs on the air. Please make that call and make a pledge of any amount, whether it's $60 or $360. Call 713-526-5738 or make a pledge online at kpft.org. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. A new and historic Gaza Tribunal, a gathering of international experts and human rights defenders united to expose and address the crimes committed by Israel in Gaza, was held May 26th through the 29th, 2025, in Sarajevo. There were many great speeches and remarks delivered at that tribunal, and I plan on airing some of them on this show over the next few weeks. And I will begin by airing now some of the opening remarks of Professor Richard Falk, former UN Special Rapporteur and Professor Emeritus of International Law at Princeton.
The Gaza Tribunal is devoted to bearing witness to Israel's crimes against the people of Gaza. Beyond this, the purpose of the tribunal is to add whatever weight it can to the torment and outrage of peoples throughout the world, to bring the Gaza ordeal of death and destruction to a rapid end by urging action to be taken in the name of our common humanity. We give grateful thanks to the International University of Sarajevo for allowing us to meet on its campus. As Rector Yildirim reminded us, we are of course also mindful of Sarajevo's and Bosnia's recent past and its relevance to the tragic fate that has befallen the people of Palestine who have been made either refugees or persecuted strangers in their own homeland. In this period of more than 19 months, the eyes and ears of the world have been exposed to daily atrocities, victimizing the besieged, crowded, impoverished, and tiny Gaza Strip. Earlier genocides, including the Holocaust, were mostly known in retrospect, by way of survivor stories and reconstructed images of the horrors experienced by the victims. This was in macabre contrast to the devastation visited upon Gaza. Day after day, the unspeakable suffering of its remarkably resilient and resisting people offer us a transparent TV spectacle of evil, made worse by being brought to human awareness in real time. Shamelessly, Israel made little attempt to hide its genocidal intentions or disguise its genocidal tactics. It openly declared its purpose to be to kill and maim Palestinians, whether by bombs or by chilling refusals to allow Gazans to obtain food and medical supplies. Its leaders invoked biblical stories of genocide to justify the extermination of the Palestinian population of Gaza. Prominent Israeli citizens and government officials compared the mentality of killing Palestinians to that accompanying the killing of cockroaches. Some high-profile Israelis even advocated dropping a nuclear bomb on densely populated Gaza. The Israeli hostages held by Hamas did not restrain Israel's violence or move the government toward accepting a permanent ceasefire, even after the fury of its campaign went on month after month without achieving its stated military objective of destroying Hamas. The pleas and warnings of the world's leading moral authority figures went unheeded. Those voices included dedicated calls from Pope Francis and Pope Leo XIV, and from the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, and several Nobel Peace Prize winners. These varied, revered voices were defiantly scorned by Israel's government and citizenry, and the massacres continued to go on. The UN, despite making a variety of responses, has not been able to stop the killing, let alone protect the people, even the children. It has been blocked from taking action by the complicity of the North American and European liberal democracies. It has become obvious to all that the UN lacks the political will, authority, and capabilities to override the genocidal support given Israel by the US. As the Israeli rogue behavior persisted, the peoples of the world, including in the countries aligned with Israel, mounted increasingly militant protests. But the governments that could have made a difference watched the carnage without making moves to stop it. And this includes the governments of Israel's own Arab neighbors. It is against this background that the Gaza Tribunal was established some months ago, launched in London in November of 2024, and since then working hard to prepare as well as we could for this public session in Sarajevo.
That was Professor Richard Falk, former UN Special Rapporteur and Professor Emeritus of International Law at Princeton, delivering the opening remarks at the Gaza Tribunal in Sarajevo. As I mentioned, I plan to air more remarks delivered at that tribunal during the next episodes of Arab Voices. During the previous episodes of Arab Voices, I aired some of the remarks delivered at the Gaza Habibti exhibition held in Houston, Texas in May 2025, including the remarks of Dr. Rol Al-Farra, a Palestinian physician from Gaza, about the ongoing Israeli genocide and the murder of approximately 170 family members in Gaza by Israel since October 2023. The day after she spoke at the Gaza Habibti exhibition, Dr. Fadi Jouda, Palestinian-American physician, poet, and translator, who won numerous awards and recognitions over the years, delivered these two poems at that exhibition.
Dr. Al-Farah, our dear friend, spoke of how many family members of hers who have been killed. And I remember early in the genocide thinking about also the tendency of being here, that we live in a society that wants us to prove who our dead are. And then somehow some of us become more valuable Palestinians because we are from Gaza. As if those of you, including my wife, who was not from Gaza, are any less Palestinian than those who are from Gaza. And so I wrote this poem in response to this. I have my dead. How are they mine? How can I let them go? They keep coming, and I have ceased updating the world. I have told the truth, have spent my life mourning it with milestones. Haven't you? I have lied. My dead and I have never met or spoken a word. As for their names in English, Allahu Akbar. And as for my living kin who never met their dead in life, I am a grief capitalist. I claim them all. The siege said so. The siege said, no, it's ill-advised for my heart to get too close to those the siege will kill. Did I stay away? How away? How alone, my alone? First, we were grass and the siege mowed us. Then you hailed the mirror state of your lawn. You wanted it maintained. One state or two, one fallacy for another. I told you the truth. I have my dead, and they were given decades to breed like rabbits. I couldn't keep up down the rabbit hole. I was amassing a fortune for a resurrection foretold. My last name is so many who are not. This village, near that, we coalesced, mongrelized into orchards of what and what not, and learned to count 2, 3, 50 pigeons and 100,000 stars in the night. The freshly plucked are the brightest, the flickering forever maimed. Astral the math, my black hole and yours, valves for the same light. To flail or seal tight. I have my dead, and I am changed because you have wasted their lives. Too many for me, not enough for you. So why do you want to kiss me in these unprecedented times? Kill and tell, and my kin, they're always asking for nothing. Then it's always something you make them beg for. Your purulent milk, yellow, green, then rust. I have laid the truth, have furnished no proof, prefer not to. I have lied. My bereaved are more than 100, fewer than 10. 50 ways to say it. I've been with you longer than I've been with them. 50 ways to say it. You, my killer, have become my kin. Say good morning to me in Arabic. Say good evening and good night. Say that you will wake up among the good every morning and walk among them every night. Say a jasmine morning to you, a rose to my night in Arabic. Say them to my grass, my living and my dead. Truth is never finished. First, They came for the Palestinians, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't Palestinian. Then they came for America, and we all became Palestinian. Then we were good. They came back for the Palestinians, and we didn't speak out. First they came for good, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't good. Then they came for natives. This is a land without natives, and the natives shall be removed. They came for Iraqis, Yemenis, Congolese, and I said nothing because they've been coming for the Congolese for so long and we never spoke out. They came for rubber, then for blood mineral. I was petrol pending electric vehicle. And when they came for the Japanese, I said come after them some more. First they came for Hanoi and Timor, and again for Afghans while waving freedom flags for Sudan in Haiti. They came for so many others. I was a shadow. I wanted to be praised. Then they shushed the world, praised it, and it wasn't praise. First, they came for my heart. I was a child, and they ate my heart. First, we had legs and ran for the hills, and the horses said nothing because we were unicorns. Then they came for the hills and forced us down to sea, and we said nothing because we had drowned. Then they came for the desert, but the desert, like the sea, didn't quench their thirst, and that was when they came for the river to stop it from talking to the sea. First, they laid God to rest. And on the seventh day, God rose and spoke the city's name in every alphabet to revive the city of the dead in every alphabet. First they came for my grandparents, but my parents lived. Then for me, but my children lived. Then they came for the media, and the media hailed the kingdom of nothing and severed our tongues. Then they came for the courts, and I wasn't a judge. Then for schools, and wiped them out for generations. First they came for water, and you said nothing because your pee was well balanced. Then they came for aid, kneecapped and decapitated it, and you said nothing because you were not hungry or cold, had hogged all the medicine and cereals, blocked access to pigeon and poultry feed. Then they came back for the map, but the map laughed them off. Who bombs hospitals to inherit the earth? And you said nothing because you sold them weapons, and when they came for mobile clinics, they set up a no-fly zone for kites, air, and wind, because no oxygen for the dead. Then they came for the dirt, and dirt had no lips, so they tossed our corpses in the street, and our corpses dared to be humanitarian for the animals. And you reposted the images. Then they came for the cemeteries, and when the skeletons said nothing, they asked for more caterpillars and dozers. Then, as bull and moth, you passed your bills. And when they circled back to identity, my authenticity said, I am that I am, I am that I am not, and I am not that I am, and neither they nor you are the doctors of my bones. Then they returned for the face of God, because the face of God is everywhere you turn, but it said nothing. First they came for the order of things, and my ashes said nothing because I was a phoenix. Then they embezzled history, but memory's account grew a forest, and that was when they came for time. And it drove them insane that they couldn't turn off time, and they went crazy that they had colonized a time in which there was no one left for them to come after, for they did not know how to be with others outside the madness of pursuit, the sweet perfume of domination. Then time did them in, and they did their time, and were so alone for so long, until we, whom they had abolished, returned from our aloneness with our cities rebuilt. And in the new time, they came for forgiveness, and I said nothing because I was not the forgiveness they were asking for. Then they came around and asked for forgiveness right. And it was the only power I had that I could grant, and I granted it. Then they came for their astonishment. Who was I to grant them what only gods can grant? But their astonishment said nothing. And when there was no astonishment left, there was nothing left to forgive.
That was Dr. Fadi Juda, Palestinian-American physician, poet, and translator, delivering poems at the Gaza Habibti exhibition held in Houston, Texas in May 2025. You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different U.S. and European cities. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Did you know that this program, Arab Voices, has been on the air since April 2002? That's over 22 years of weekly Arab Voices programming, over 1,000 programs covering different topics with more than 1,000 expert guests appearing on this show from around the globe. All of that has been possible because of your support to KPFT, Houston's community station, our community radio station. And it is time for the fund drive. Please call right now to support KPFT at 713-526-5738 and make a tax-deductible contribution or make it online at kpft.org. Every dollar counts. Think of the value you get out of KPFT and really for everyone who listens. We know that not everyone can contribute, but if you can and appreciate what KPFT brings you every day, please consider a pledge, because KPFT relies on you, the listeners, for support. The phones are open. There is room for your call. Help keep up the momentum. Call 713-526-5738 or donate online at kpft.org. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.